is your ship and you are the captain. Oh, captain, let's make a deal where we both say the things that we both really feel. I feel scared and I'm starting to sink, and I only sink deeper the deeper I think. Oh, captain, oh, captain, deal. Oh, captain, deal. Oh, captain, deal. Oh, wow. There are red spots under your eyes.
Chapter 4. You Know Nothing. Zhang Qinghua doesn't get to return to Luo Jiahui on his first day back, and not on the second day back either, or even on the third day back. And every day, back in the day-to-day out of things, his anxiety rises over what he's done. He's changed something. Intentionally, possibly and probably significantly. He's not too sure how the universe might twist and turn to keep the plot on track with canon, honestly, when the real plot of Proud Immortal Demon Way, in all its sellout, missed opportunities, lost outline glory, hasn't actually started yet. He just doesn't know. He really, really doesn't know. Real canon divergence has never really happened before. This is new territory. New and very scary territory. It could all backfire on him at any moment for all he knows, no matter what his system said. Zhang Qinghua feels too aware of himself as he goes about his business. He has many full conversations over those 3 days, in which he feels less and less present. He's too aware of the body he's occupying, the head he's looking out from, how fragile his position in this life is. Like he's a newly awakened transmigrator all over again. Like he's waiting, again, for someone to pull back the curtains, tear off the paneling, and show him the wires beneath this world and all its fake people. Like he's waiting for the catch. Author God, transmigrator, combined, those terms form a new title called Universal Record Holder for Most Existential Crises Had in One Day. Fun! Dealing with the incident between Wan Jianpeak and Zui Xianpeak takes up a lot of his time, which keeps him too busy to really fly apart with nerves. He has to investigate exactly how the incident happened, while sect leader Yue Qingyuan, a bro among bros, truly, Zhang Qinghua takes back some of his earlier shit-talking, takes one for the team by keeping the shaken-up, pissed-off, and unhappy Wei Qingwei and Zhang Qingyan out from underfoot. Zhang Qinghua lets Yue Qingyuan, their warm and wise big brother, be the one to deliver the news that the fault of the explosion lies with one incompetent Wan Jian disciple. Zhang Qinghua fucking knew it. Who failed to store and seal the fire eater sword cleaning solution correctly? Wei Qingwei is of a higher peak than Zhang Qinghua, Zhang Men Shixiang. It would be like Zhang Qinghua trying to pull rank on Shun Qingqiu. Well, actually, no. Zhang Qinghua trying to pull rank on Qingjing Peak Lord Shun Qingqiu would be way worse for a variety of reasons. But it's kind of similar. Definitely a piece of delicate diplomacy that should be handled by their great sect leader, the Lord of Qiangding Peak, Yue Qingyuan. Diplomatically, lets Zhang Qinghua be the one to take on reviewing the safety measures of both Wan Jianpeak and Zui Xianpeak, to make sure that something like this never happens again. Someone could actually die if there's a next time, it's true. But it's going to take so long. Zhang Qinghua really isn't looking forward to arguing with people over the inconvenience of workplace safety measures. Bro, if near-unkillable immortals want to risk immolation out of arrogance and laziness and bizarre cultivation ideals of skillful handling, who is Zhang Qinghua to tell them to stop? Besides the Lord of Anding Peak, directly charged with sect logistics. The enormity of the task makes him want to curl up into a ball. Even if he can delegate a great deal of the task across Andeng, Wanjian, and Zuexian, how is he supposed to eliminate the basic problem of human error? It can't be done. He can't retroactively add to people's common sense. Catching up on General Tang Chong Mountain Sect and Anding Peak business takes up the rest of his precious time. Zhang Qinghua whimpers aloud when he sees the stack of paperwork that's accumulated on his desk since he's been gone, just shoving trivial work back onto his indecisive or scheming disciples so he can find the work that's actually worthy of a peak lord takes way too long. He sends a quick note of apology to the inn that Luo Jiahui and Luo Binghe are staying at down the mountain. He really does intend to be back as soon as possible. The fourth day is more of the same. More of stacked day-in, day-out catch-up, at least at first. Unlike the past 3 days and nights, the fourth day is corrupted by dread that increases as the sun falls lower and lower in the sky. That night, Zhang Qinghua must carefully extract himself for a secret meeting with Mo Bei Jun. Not missing his super-secret spy meeting could be considered a good thing, but the inside of Zhang Qinghua's chest twists itself into fearful knots anyway, as it always does, because a secret treacherous rendezvous with a demon lord who'll probably kill him someday is always stressful. Just because he won't have to apologize to the future Northern Demon King for standing him up, groveling like never before at the man's feet for leaving him hanging, doesn't mean the situation isn't still complicated and tense, and occasionally verging on life or death. This meeting still feels more complicated than ever, even though Mo Bei Jun shouldn't know that Zhang Qinghua has been meddling with the plot, even though the demon lord shouldn't even know there was a plot to meddle with. Zhang Qinghua is almost always terrified that Mo Bei Jun will somehow be able to smell the transmigration on him, will somehow notice that there's something wrong with him, that there's something off about him, that there's something unnatural and untrustworthy about him, and ultimately decide that this version of Zhang Qinghua is a loose end to be tied off sooner rather than later. Mo Bei Jun will just go, "Putting up with this guy isn't worth it." And that'll be that. No more Zhang Qinghua. Tonight, Zhang Qinghua, who has fumbled his way through every single day of this frequently miserable transmigration experience, can't fully persuade himself that Mo Bei Jun won't somehow know what he's done. Zhang Qinghua puts on a disguise, switching out the peak lord robes for plain robes, pretty much, and sneaks out of his leisure house, in the way of someone who's done this 100 times before, and has been doing this since he was a disciple. He doesn't kid himself to think that a handful of Anding cultivators don't have an inkling, the faintest suspicion, that he vanishes from the mountains sometimes on private business. But as peak lord, he doesn't have to report to any of them. If he doesn't answer his door when someone comes knocking late at night, he could have just taken a sleeping pill and conked out on his bed for all they know. If they ever force their way in and find him missing, for all they know, he's just fucked off to go drinking down the mountain. Definitely not helping his future "I don't have a secret mistress and child" case, unfortunately. But good misdirection, honestly, if he ever needs to hide his actual activities. Zhang Qinghua likes to think that he's gotten pretty good at stealth over the years. It's almost second nature now to slip down into some of the semi-secret transportation and supply tunnels of Andeng, and then down various cliffs and back paths without encountering a single soul. He's in charge of nearly all of the logistics for all of Tung Chong Mountain Sect, so he knows when all the shipments are moving. He knows the routes of all the patrols. He knows when various pavilions and yards are supposed to be empty. He's a spy. He's the scum spy. His winding route through and down the deserted and uncultivated areas of Anding and Tangchong is as smooth as it remains exhilaratingly stressful. It's not any different to any other night. But how is he supposed to act like this is just another secret, treacherous rendezvous? Is there a good way to act casual while giving information on the movements of human sects and nobles to a powerful demon lord? A way to behave like he hasn't been meddling with the upbringing of a heavenly demon, the secret bastard of the recently fallen demon emperor? Like he's not mildly disloyally planning to hug the golden thighs of his current boss's future boss? If there is a method of staying cool and nonchalant, it's probably far beyond airplane shooting towards the sky, who has probably never really succeeded in acting casual about anything. His casualness is anxious. That's his casual. But then again, his nervous tics can't be signs of lying if he's always like this. Optimism. He tries it out sometimes. Once he's down the mountainside, out of and away from his sect, it's just a quick skip and a hop through the dark countryside, past the dim outskirts of a small village beyond Sanjiao town, to an isolated location in the wilderness. Loops and twists keep Zhang Qinghua from being followed, if he has any followers. Regularly shifting the initial meeting point keeps anyone from setting an ambush. It's all very clandestine. Zhang Qinghua waits in the darkness, listening to the hum of insects and the distant calls of wildlife, a hand on the sword he prefers not to use in battle if he can help it. The night is cloudy, clouding the sliver of moon out tonight. Does Mo Beijun know? Zhang Qinghua internally begs of his system. Does he know? His no-good system doesn't answer him, of course. Asshole. After an eternity that likely only lasts several minutes, there's a hum of power beside him, the cool whoosh and crackle of a portal opening to another location. Mo Beijun can just break into Zhang Qinghua's leisure house whenever he wants. And he does do that. He does that way too often. But they don't really meet there officially or regularly. Also, damn airplane for giving Mo Beijun such impressive, overpowered, and inconsistent teleportation powers. As Luo Bingha's right-hand man, Zhang Qinghua doesn't ever invite the demon lord to drop by in person and hang out. Mo Beijun never calls ahead. Mo Beijun first appeared on Tangchong unprompted, uninvited, and unscheduled all those years ago, apparently just to remind Zhang Qinghua that he can and will, if necessary, murder Zhang Qinghua in his sleep. The demon lord dropped in, apparently, just to let it be known that Tangchong Mountain Sect's protections cannot and will not stand between Mo Beijun's powers and eliminating those who dare betray him. And also that he could, if Zhang Qinghua ever crossed him, expose Zhang Qinghua as a traitor to his sect at any moment, which would either see Zhang Qinghua executed, imprisoned, or exiled, which would mean losing Tangchong's protections, which would let Mo Beijun hunt him down and gut him even more easily. It was terrifying. It's never not terrifying, really. Even though Zhang Qinghua kind of likes to think he's gotten used to the surprise encounters by now. After getting over the mind-numbing terror of Mo Beijun suddenly invading his home and, for whatever reason, taking his shitty disciple bed enough to make a few observations, while Zhang Qinghua wouldn't dare suggest that the demon lord is jumpy, when he's on Tangchong Mountain, he might privately think that Mo Beijun is definitely on edge when surrounded by human cultivators and the possibility of an ambush. An on-edge Mo Beijun never bodes well for Zhang Qinghua, walking away from a meeting without suffering some extremely effective intimidation, just to ensure that he still has the fear of the future Northern Demon King deeply engraved into his heart. as Peak Lord, Shang Qinghua may have the power to keep his disciples away now when Mo Beijun drops in and jump scares the living daylights out of him. But everyone is generally more comfortable when there's no chance of getting caught. Shang Qinghua likes his sleep, which he never gets when Mo Beijun shows up to remind Shang Qinghua that he owns him and all his stuff. Also, Shang Qinghua would be really happy if he never had to see Mo Beijun's icy, invite that disciple knocking on the door inside and see what fucking happens, I dare you, glower ever again. As an OP demon lord with OP teleportation powers, Mo Beijun probably won't die if one of Shang Qinghua's martial siblings suddenly kicks the door down, ready to rumble, but it's not 100%. Shit would go down if they were caught. If Tian Longjun can be caught and permanently imprisoned, it can happen to any other demon, and Shang Qinghua could probably orchestrate that if he put his mind to it. If he wanted to accelerate his scheduled canonical death, that is, holy shit, which he absolutely does not. In the best case scenario, in which Shang Qinghua is miraculously presumed an innocent victim by Yue Qingyuan, his leisure house and probably half of An Ding still gets wrecked. So, after way too many surprise visits, back when he was head disciple, Shang Qinghua hesitantly suggested setting up scheduled meetings away from the sect in the hopes of getting Mo Beijun to stop just showing up at his house. He thinks it's working? Maybe it's much better that way. The portal is small, entrancing and unnerving in its shifting blue and black edges, and cold. Shang Qinghua takes a deep breath, holds it, and steps through. One thing that Airplane Shooting Towards the Sky forgot to expect about this world is the realization of presence. Spiritual energy is a thing. Demonic energy is a thing. Spiritual and demonic energy are things that can be felt in this not-so-fictional-anymore world. And there's no real equivalent from his last life. Cultivation and magic being real is a fun idea until, oh shit, cultivation and magic are really real. He forgot to expect it because this energy wasn't such a big part of his second childhood, except for the part where he had it and tried his best to develop it in accordance with his own curiosity and the ambitions of the original Shang Qinghua. He wasn't nearly so prepared to deal with the cultivated spiritual energy of other people when he got to Changchong Mountain Sect. Hit him like a lot of static shocks. Sometimes like walking into a wall of cold water. It's culturally more polite to keep your spiritual energy restrained. But the sect is full of lots of accidents and arguments. There are lots of developing disciples with terrible control. And some people just give off this aura of being powerful badasses anyway, even when they're restraining themselves. And Shang Qinghua is never sure if it's some weird negative space effect of suppression or if the effect is actually a purposeful humble brag, a power move by design. At best, bearing the brunt of someone else's spiritual energy is often like being stared at intensely and being unable to be unaware of it. At worst, people in this world have power that can crackle out of them and over the skin like needles, radiance which can burn like boiling acid and bite like cold beyond cold, presence of will which can make a man want to go to his knees and beg for mercy. The portal is unpleasant, is what Shang Qinghua is saying. Demonic energy doesn't tend to mesh well with righteous cultivators. It puts most human beings on edge, since it usually belongs to something actively trying to kill them. It's not the worst feeling ever, going through Mo Beijun's shadowy portals of black, icy energy. But it's also like being squashed and stretched all over the body, pulled and pushed in every direction,
while moving through a walk-in freezer at minus 40 degrees Celsius. Xiang Qinghua is very grateful that it's always a short experience. The other side of the portal opens up on... Xiang Qinghua has no idea where he is now, actually, which really adds to the terror of the whole experience. Mo Beijun went along with the meeting somewhere else suggestion, but he gets to pick the somewhere else. It's not the demon realm, Xiang Qinghua thinks, with a glance at the completely overcast night sky and the green foliage around him. The mountain range looming in the distance is of snowy, jagged peaks stabbing up into the stormy heavens. It's not the Tian Gong range, which means that he's still a long way from home. He's standing on a hill, surrounded by tall pines, and it's cold. The wind here is sharp. Mo Beijun is waiting for him, for his report, standing just ahead. The portal closes behind him, and Xiang Qinghua valiantly doesn't flinch this time. Airplane shooting towards the sky wasn't allowed to wax poetic about Mo Beijun, the protagonist's right-hand man in his web novel Proud Immortal Demon Way, by his own personal rule. It would have shifted focus away from his protagonist's son, made Mo Beijun into a competitor. It also probably would have made readers realize en masse that Mo Beijun was one of the author's favorite characters, his ideal man. So Airplane kept his descriptions positive, but also as efficient as possible. Like the stoic, apathetic right-hand man himself. Xiang Qinghua doesn't have a legion of fans judging his every word now. All he has is a stingy, stubborn system which listens in on all his woes and fanciful bullshit whether he likes it or not, and whether it likes it or not. He may be stuck with his system, yes, and it may be one of the meanest and most unhelpful beings he's ever been forced to share the experience of life with. But that also means that his system is stuck with him. It's trapped in his head, too. He can wax poetic about Mo Beijun all he likes now. And wow, there's a lot to wax poetic about. It's one thing to write descriptions of an ideal man in the form of an icy demon lord. It's another to see a picture of a giant demon lord as a fictional character. It's another thing entirely to have that man be totally real and looming over you just by standing there. Mo Beijun is tall, enormously tall, probably around 2 meters tall. Xiang Qinghua would love to measure this, to get it exactly right, but that would be how he dies if he tried. And he does absolutely nothing to make himself smaller. He's broad, muscular, much thicker than Xiang Qinghua was expecting. Most male lead material characters, according to the superficial standards of Airplane's world, are supposed to be super thin, or at least super narrow at the waist, cut like supermodels or twiggy like teenage pop stars. But Mo Beijun is not that. No, not Mo Beijun. And unfairly, that just makes him hotter. The man looks like he could wrestle whatever the demonic equivalent of a polar bear is in this world and win. He could literally punch a boulder and stone would shatter. Mo Beijun has a cold tone to his skin that often makes him look like he was cut from stone or ice. His long hair is so dark that it sometimes looks blue. Xiang Qinghua can't get away with just staring at the hard line of the man's jaw, the muscle of his neck, the ridge of his collarbone, the thickness of his forearms, the length of his fingers, without Mo Beijun glaring at him. But he would really, really like to get away with that. The sharpness of the demon lord's canines, the subtle points of his ears, and the inhuman shine in his eyes is a little more subjective, in terms of sexiness. But they too have featured in far too many weird dreams. Xiang Qinghua would give up a lot to be able to wear one of the man's many massive fur cloaks, all of which once belonged to ferocious demonic beasts the demon lord probably killed with his bare hands. They look so cozy, so warm. All of which Mo Bei Jun wears open just to show off how he doesn't need them. He just knows they make him look good. My king, Shang Qinghua greets and bows. Mo Bei Jun stares at him impassively. It's pretty much exactly like standing in front of a tiger, or a bear, or anything else at the top of the food chain which might kill him if he moves too quickly. Being under his focus is always intense.
Report,
Mo Bei Jun says, low and bored. Ah, he's really too cool. Shang Qinghua swallows his heart and begins to speak. Ever since the fall of Tian Langjun, Mo Bei Jun has been, well, he's been looking even sharper. The demon realm has fallen into chaos, creating unending stress for everyone. It's an ongoing power grab. Loyal retainers are turning on each other. Great demon kings and demon lords are fashioning themselves as the next emperor. Would-be emperors are shortly beheaded by their rivals and stabbed in the back by their own children. Clans are descending into feuds and civil wars accordingly. Wives and husbands are being stolen like it's a game of pass the parcel. Alliances are breaking. New alliances are being forged. Old treaties are being burned. New treaties are being written in blood. It's really a shit show over there, and it's spilling over into the human realm, which took its own damage from Tian Langjun. Lots of demons are taking advantage of the chaos to raid the human realm as they please, especially now that there's no longer a human-fascinated Tian Langjun around to disapprove of their ambition or fun. Tian Langjun wasn't a thorough enforcer of much, but getting his attention was definitely not good. Some human sects, nobles, and rogue cultivators have recently been moving to take advantage of the chaos in the demon realm themselves, removing demonic influences and settlements from their territories, even launching small incursions into the demon realm. Some of these assaults are whole-scale slaughter of local demon clans, not all of which have made themselves a nuisance to the nearby human settlements. Some of these assaults are to retrieve demonic riches and treasure out of greed. Some of these missions are to retrieve human prisoners or stolen artifacts of power. Shang Qinghua, being in a great position to hear about a lot of this, and having unique insight into all sorts of politics to extrapolate, shares who's been beheading who lately and why. Demon Lord so-and-so wants territory in the human realm. A demon saint wants some of this one human sect's warriors to get revenge on that other demon clan for her. A noble righteous cultivator has sworn to bring his betrothed, the head of one of the contenders, for the position of Western Demon King. Sect What's-Their-Name has discovered a new gang trafficking stolen goods and kidnapped people to the demon realm. Blah, 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 the usual stuff. It never ends. Shang Qinghua hands over scrolls with the most pertinent information so that his king doesn't have to decipher and remember all of his babbling. He keeps forgetting not to share more minor, but sort of random, details about banished cultivator insert name here's lost sister and princess name is a bad pun secretly being a quarter human. The meeting is going pretty well so far, Shang Qinghua dares to think optimistically. Less of the demonic physical intimidation than usual, but I'm not complaining. Mo Bei Jun reaches out to take the scrolls, his cloak shifting, and then Shang Qinghua catches a glimpse of strange markings running up the man's neck. So you probably don't want to get involved if that guy's son comes around asking for your support. My king, what's that? Shang Qinghua double takes, then flails in alarm trying to get a closer look at the swirly, flowery, red and black markings running down the demon lord's neck, as well as peeking at the edge of Mo Bei Jun's sleeve. It's on his hands, too. What the fuck? Oh, shit. That's just the sort of artful affliction that some hack author would think might look super sexy on a shirtless protagonist, both before and during some life-saving pa-pa-pa. Mo Bei-jun glares at him, shifting the furs to hide the injury again. Is it poisoning by a Venus nightshade demon? Shang Qinghua demands, high-pitched with panic. My king, did you engage their clan in conflict after all? They would have moved on before long, after they'd accrued the funds to resettle. Your territories are too inhospitable for them to stay permanently.
Their princess was invited in by my father, and then attempted to forcibly situate herself within my favor.
Mo Bei-jun says flatly, like it's Shang Qinghua's fault for not better forewarning him. Shang Qinghua has no idea what forcibly situate means. Assassination? Seduction? Blackmail? Robbery? His protagonist's son's demon wives all tend to follow a certain pattern. Figurative and sometimes literal man-eaters. Venus nightshade demons are one of the poison-type variants of the usual mold, and Shang Qinghua has no doubt that they're way scarier and way less harmless than proud immortal demon Wei made them out to be when Luo Bingha, classic stallion protagonist, tangled with them. Femme fatales are really no joke in reality.
I killed her,
Mo Bei-jun says. With your bare hands? Shang Qinghua yelps. My king, again? He kind of wants to pull at his hair. A surprising, but probably obvious in hindsight part of this arrangement, is him helping Mo Bei-jun avoid all the single, horny demons on the hunt for a powerful demon lord husband. Luo Bingha, future protagonist, please grow up quickly so that people stop trying to kidnap Mo Bei-jun, or spike his drinks, or seduce and support Mo Bei-jun's shitty uncle or lesser cousins or whatever. It generally puts Mo Bei-jun in a super bad mood. People are dying, little Bing Bing. Hurry up! I told you that fire works best on poisonous plant demons, my king. Shang Qinghua complains. I know that's not good for you, but couldn't you have made a retainer take care of it? The poison needs to be properly treated before it causes damage. It could make you vulnerable to Venus Nightshade demon influence and poison in the future. Mo Bei-jun's scowl deepens. Bad sign. Bad sign! Shang Qinghua desperately starts rummaging through his Jiankun pouches for one of the miracle cures he tries to keep on him at all times. Sex pollen and other aphrodisiacs are an occupational hazard of this world, so it's important to raid Jiantao Peak's shelves and be prepared. This author god transmigrator tries to make sure that he has all of the elixirs, poultices, and potions to not accidentally, literally die of sexual frustration out in the wilderness. Or, you know, poison or whatever. Ah, here, my king, this is the essence of the flat-leaved faith orchid, a rare plant from the same region as the Venus nightshade demons. Shang Qinghua offers desperately, like this cure will be able to save both their lives here. They destroy them with prejudice due to their ability to counteract most of their poison abilities, and most other poisons. A few drops in a bath should suffice. Shang Qinghua holds out the little red bottle and, with all of his strength, does not think about Mo Bei-jun taking the lead in a bath-turned-pa-pa-pa scene. Nope! He's not very strong, though. Fortunately, he's pretty sure that Mo Bei-jun can't read minds, at least. If only because he would absolutely be dead right now if Mo Bei-jun knew even a tenth of the extremely impertinent thoughts Shang Qinghua has had about him. Shang Qinghua is definitely going to think about Mo Bei-jun taking a bath in the bath later, unfortunately. It's inevitable now. Oh well, he tried his best. His mental strength just wasn't enough. Mo Bei-jun shouldn't have made him take all those baths for him when they met. Mo Bei-jun is looking at the bottle like Shang Qinghua is offering him more poison. Oh shit. Oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. Mo Bei-jun moves, and Shang Qinghua flinches. But the Demon Lord pauses. Before he can lay a finger on Shang Qinghua to question him or intimidate him, his large hand flexing with restraint, The swirling, flowery poison markings have twisted artfully around some of his long fingers. Shang Qinghua gulps, remembering that, according to the rules of a hack author writing a sellout stallion novel, Venus Nightshade Demon poison can pass through touch, which, reverse engineering Airplane's modus operandi, probably conveniently kept the poisoned protagonist from soliciting the help of any of his current wives at the time. Fuck. And it's not the end of the world if Shang Qinghua gets poisoned. He'll just beg the mercy of Chen Tao Peak and come up with some pathetic lie that won't fool Mu Qingfang in the slightest. But it'll probably suck. He's not really stoic in any way. Definitely not male lead material, like those who can tough out plot devices without even grimacing. Mo Beijun unclenches his fist and takes the bottle from Chang Qinghua's hands without touching him. Chang Qinghua can't help but be relieved. Ah, thank you, my king. Mo Beijun narrows his eyes, and then suddenly he's looming over Shang Qinghua, still not touching, but now radiating demonic energy so fiercely that it makes Shang Qinghua's eyes prickle. If Shang Qinghua, displaced author god and unofficial master of purple prose, is allowed to not be poetic about the experience, he'd probably compare hostile demonic energy to burning. Sometimes it's hot, sometimes it's cold, but it's never comfortable. It kind of hurts. Sometimes it really, really hurts. Now's not so bad, really, but it can be pretty bad. Shang Qinghua is a peak lord. He can power through most paralyzing hostile demonic energy these days, at least in order to hustle out of the danger zone. But there were times as a disciple where he could genuinely weep in a younger Mo Beijun's presence, barely able to breathe through the other man's tangible anger, even when it wasn't directed at him. Now that was groveling. Shang Qinghua really doesn't miss being that young. He's blaming it all on teenage hormones. Thank goodness they're so much more mature now.
I will test this cure of yours carefully,
Mo Beijun warns lowly, dangerously.
If it is harmful, I will treat this as an attempt on my life.
And rip off your limbs for the betrayal, Mo Beijun doesn't need to say. Shang Qinghua nods frantically. He tries to speak, fails, and has to swallow to clear his throat. Understood, my king. Very sensible. So wise. I definitely make sure that any weird bottle someone handed me is what they told me it was. Thank you for your leniency. Mo Beijun doesn't back off, considering Shang Qinghua and the bottle suspiciously. Shang Qinghua glances at the bottle again to make sure he gave Mo Beijun the right one. He labels his collection of miracle cures and golden plot devices very carefully. His memory isn't foolproof. Ah, thank goodness, correct bottle. You can ask any healer, my king, Shang Qinghua persists, wringing his hands to keep himself from accidentally touching. They'll tell you that the flat-leaved faith orchid is a cure for all sorts of poisons. Sure thing, especially Venus Nightshade demon poisons. Totally guaranteed. Works on demons and humans and half-demons alike. Mo Beijun stares, unimpressed. He leans closer, looming over one shoulder, and sniffs Shang Qinghua. One of the many, very weird moments that always helps Shang Qinghua remember, all right, not human, very much not human. He stays very still, super still as he can stay while also visibly trembling with nerves. He tells himself that there's no way Mo Beijun should be able to smell heavenly demon on him. Shang Qinghua never really directly touched his protagonist's son if he could help it on their journey. His son's OP demon powers are still deeply sealed. Shang Qinghua has gone through the equivalent of at least 8 decontamination showers over the past 4 days while inspecting Wan Tian Peak's explosive accident. He shouldn't smell of anything weird right now, really. Nothing except maybe ink. There is no way, zero, zilch, nada, no chance, that Mobei Jun should be able to smell Odekanon divergence on him right now. There should be no identifying the perfume of proxy to protagonist halo today. No aqua de transmigration scent. That would be way too OP and bad. Zhang Qinghua would also just really appreciate it if Mobei Jun could stop sniffing him in general. It's really weird. He has no idea what it means. It often just means that Zhang Qinghua is getting way too close to a demon lord, his king, for comfort, which does some weird things to him. No need to get into the details, but yeah, Mobei Jun is strong and scary, and while Zhang Qinghua would like to say that the man is too hot for anyone to keep their cool, the man literally exudes cool like an ice statue. And that does some weird things to Zhang Qinghua, too. No matter how much useful information Zhang Qinghua dishes out to please the demon lord, no matter how he helps consolidate the man's power in these troubled times, Mobei Jun could just kill him here and now and no one could stop him. My king, should I continue with my report? Mobei Jun leans back.
No, the demon lord decides. Dismissed.
He steps back and, with a wave of his hand, opens another portal behind Zhang Qinghua. If the hairs on the back of his neck weren't already standing on end, the cool power of the portal just behind him would certainly do the job. Zhang Qinghua takes a deep breath. He kind of wants to say something about the cure Mobei Jun is holding. Something about the scrolls he's handed over. Something about anything. When he hugged Mobei Jun's thighs all those years ago, offering his services to his far-from-home and injured king, promising to follow his king for life, he didn't explicitly offer to sell Dengcheng Mountain Sect out specifically. He offered to use his position at Dengcheng to Mobei Jun's advantage. So he was definitely betraying Dengcheng Mountain Sect right now, and him potentially selling Dengcheng Mountain Sect out completely someday was heavily implied, but at least not directly stated. There are lots of different ways to interpret unite the demon and human realms, after all. And he said that he thought he and Mobei Jun could help each other out. He told Mobei Jun that he wanted the demon lord's help to rise in status. It's been a very one-sided helping so far. Which is fine. Zhang Qinghua doesn't really want to know what the demonic version of helping looks like, so he tries not to make demands. Mobei Jun restraining himself from removing Zhang Qinghua's limbs can be helping. Deciding not to kill Zhang Qinghua, after all, can be helping. That's fine, too. Their relationship has changed over the years in ways that Zhang Qinghua doesn't always understand. They've both gotten older. Mobei Jun has gotten both angrier and less angry. There was a definite shift in power when Mobei Jun, who's young for a demon lord, stepped up and took on several responsibilities of being the Northern Demon King from his unreliable father. There was another unspeakable shift of sorts when Zhang Qinghua actually became the head disciple and then a peak lord of one of the most powerful sects in the world, which Mobei Jun had openly doubted he would ever achieve. There was also a very stressful shift when Tian Langquan died in the human realm and Mobei Jun's future title as Northern Demon King became potentially unstable. Even more than just having a clan full of powerful demons all regularly jockeying for power. Zhang Qinghua has now meddled with the protagonist. There should be another shift. But Mobei Jun has no idea what he's done. No idea that Tian Langquan has a bastard, a perfectly formed half-demon and half-human baby. No idea what the name Luo Bingha means for the balance of power in the world. Zhang Qinghua kind of wants to say something, but he also very much wants to live. Mo Beijun looks at Zhang Qinghua warningly. Honestly, Zhang Qinghua isn't totally sure that Mo Beijun has a way of looking that isn't a warning. The man is a living warning.
Why are you still here?
Mo Beijun demands.
Go.
He's been staring for too long. Farewell, my king. Zhang Qinghua bows deeply and flees the demon lord's presence through the unpleasant experience of the portal and steps out to a different section of the countryside than the one he originally left. He only dares to breathe again after the portal closes behind him, disappearing into thin air. He glances over his shoulder just to make sure it's gone, and sure enough, all traces of Mo Beijun's presence are gone. The night is warmer here, calmer, and the sight of Cheng Cheng in the distance brings relief to Zhang Qinghua's cowardly heart, even as his lazy legs groan at the flight back to the mountain, about the stealthy trudge back to his leisure house, about how soon the sun will rise and the day in, day out will start again. He breathes onto his cold, trembling fingers, rubbing his hands together to bring them back to life. Mo Beijun doesn't know what he's done. There are no great and terrible consequences to his canon-diverging efforts. At least, Zhang Qinghua laughs a little hysterically to himself all alone. At least, not yet.